Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we welcome everyone to New York and the Big Ten Tournament as Penn State will take on Northwestern coming up in about 3.5 hours, a little bit less than that, at Madison Square Garden. Earlier today, Wisconsin knocked out Maryland 59-54, so they advance. Wisconsin does. They'll take on Michigan State tomorrow at noon. Underway right now, it is Michigan and Iowa. Iowa got off to a great start, but Michigan has now taken the lead in that game. We'll get to a couple of points on tonight's basketball game with Northwestern in a moment. Also, more to talk about with some absurdity out there with several personalities calling for boycotts of the Final Four to make a point. We'll get into that in a few minutes as well. But first, we do need to start with talking about a special individual who passed away, and that is Ronnie Crist. For decades, the rudder of the Patriot News in Harrisburg, who went out and covered Penn State for years and did so brilliantly. He was a great resource for anybody around him. He mentored a lot of writers around him. He had the ability to get information. He had ability to get to sources. And he also had the ability to write stories along the way that just talked about facts and what was going on and not inject opinion into it. I think it's safe to say that his articles were about a Penn State program that were mostly positive. If something negative had to be written, he did write it because it had to be written. He's the one that opened the door on recruiting at Penn State. He's the one that was able to crack that nut, the first one to do it. Yeah, he and I talked about that a few times, about being the first one to do that. Ronnie Crist was a pro's pro and just a good person. His wife, Pat, was and is just tremendous. And Ronnie and I always had this little running gag that we had fun with, because my job in the 80s as the third announcer on the Penn State Network, there are various elements to the job, and one of them was I had to do the post-game interview with Joe Paterno. And on the road, I would have to tape that interview, and I'd have to then run it up to the booth, and they'd play it back. But at home, I did it live. They had a hookup down into the media room. I would sit at the front desk with Joe and ask the first 3 or 4 questions. Well, before I'd ever start with those, before Joe came out, Ronnie would always look at me, and he'd say, "You know, Steve, why don't you ask him this question?" And, of course, it was always a question where you sat back and said, "No, if I ask that question, that's going to be deep trouble." You know, and I'd give Ronnie a one-liner back, or, you know, "I'll consider that." And, of course, it was even more so after a loss. "Steve, why don't you ask him about, you know," and he had that little smirk on his face. And it was just a little interplay and exchange that we had all the time that I always got a big kick out of, because he had such a great sense of humor, because he knew what he was saying to me. Here, Steve. It would be the equivalent line. "Steve, ask him about the freshman." "Yeah, you know, Ronnie, that's a great idea. If I can fit that in, I will." And we had that little interplay before almost every post-game interview. He'd have some little comment or question to make to me about it. All of us thought the world of Ronnie Crist. Rich Scarsella, Neil Riddell, you know, David Jones, I mean, and Nick Horvath, Bob Flounders. All of us thought the world of Ronnie Crist. And not only that, all of us deeply respected Ronnie Crist. As I said, a pro's pro and an even better guy. And he'll be missed. He passed away at the age of 82 to Pat and Ronnie's family our deepest, deepest condolences, because we've missed seeing Ronnie around it's been 17 years since he covered Penn State football. 17 years. I think 2001. I want to say the Virginia game, 2001, the one that had to be made up after 9/11, is the last regular season game Ronnie covered. It may have been the last game. It was the last game he covered because Penn State didn't go to a bowl game that year. That was the last game Ronnie covered. And he has been deeply, deeply missed by all of us over the last 17 years, and of course now with the news that he's passed away at the age of 82. The people of Harrisburg, Ronnie was an AP voter, by the way. And I remember sitting in airports a couple of times with Ron, asking him about his vote, how he goes about it, how tough it was for him, especially in that era, to see games. You know, because you're covering the game that you're covering. So you have to do everything on reports and box scores. Back in that era, back in the 80s, 90s, and early 2000s, when Ron had a vote. And he had that vote. He was very meticulous and professional about it, but he also had to work hard to get information on other teams in order to make that vote. So, what a great guy. What a great pro. He set an example for so many young writers. He, John Kunda, we miss Jerry Keller. So many of them along the way. So our deepest condolences to Pat, the family, and the Patriot News family as well. Because Ronnie Crist was very, very special. Boy, did he inform a lot of Penn State fans for decades with good information, good stories, good writer. All right, we'll come back and talk about tonight's game and also get more in-depth talking about a proposal by a pair of ESPN personalities about players boycotting the Final Four. Back with more in a moment. We're in New York, Manhattan, and we'll have Jeff Byers on to talk about the Big Ten Wrestling Championship. That will be at 4:06 today. So Jeff Byers on the Big Ten Wrestling Championship, a lot on Jason Nolf. We'll do that, and plus more in the final half hour as well. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, welcome back. Jill Lenardi coming up in the next half hour on Bracketology. Jay Williams, and I've talked to Jay before. I like talking with Jay Williams. Jalen Rose, I've never talked to. Both are suggesting that maybe players should boycott the Final Four to make a point about money. Well, Jay Williams had an opportunity to boycott a Final Four. I noticed he played. Jalen Rose had two opportunities to boycott Final Fours. I noticed he played. And Jalen, by the way, why are the banners down at Michigan from your two Final Four appearances? Why? Is there maybe a number we can talk about? I don't know. This is an interesting time in college sports where intercollegiate athletics needs to do a better job of explaining how much money is actually spent on athletes. I mean, how much money is spent? Obviously, there's cost of attendance. That not an awesome and incredible number, but still a number, which is better than zero than before. Pell grants. Years ago, Pell grants counted against your scholarship. No longer do Pell Grants count against your scholarship. They don't. Now, let's be realistic, too. Some families don't have a lot of money, and the student-athletes will take the cost of attendance money and the Pell Grant money, if not both, and send them home. Now, I do realize that happens in some cases. Not every student-athlete qualifies for Pell Grants either, because there are obviously some that actually, you know, there is a cross-section of life. Not every student-athlete comes from a poor background. Some do, some don't. Some are in between. But think about what they get. Now, you know, we can do the basics of, you know, how much an education is and tuition and room and board and food and books. We can go through all of that. But now let's take the next steps as well. What else do you get? Let's see. How many of you need, if you're going to be a world-class athlete, you need world-class weight room. You need a world-class strength and conditioning coach or world-class strength and conditioning coaches. You need a speed coach. You need, it doesn't hurt to have a sports performance person around you that can monitor how you're able to excel and what rest means to you versus what heart rate means to you. Having a world-class nutritionist probably would help you along the way. All of these items, if you are a paid professional, you'd have to pay a lot of money for. And when you go to school, you get all of that. You have a world-class strength and conditioning coach. You have a world-class weight room. You have a world-class speed coach. You have a world-class nutritionist. You have a first-class sports performance person. Hey, we haven't even gotten to the part where you get great coaching, great teachers that have the ability to show you the nuances of the game that can make you better, get you to the next level. All of these items are items you don't have to pay for as the student athlete. All of these items add up. If everybody were independent, there is no way on the planet that several of the student-athletes or their families could afford to pay for any of that. Now, if they got loans through agents and so forth, they could. But then you're rolling the dice, you're going to make it. And by rolling the dice, you're going to make it, that means that would then give you the power to pay it back. But that's how you'd have to do it. And all of this, and I haven't even gotten around to all the meals that they got, which is, by the way, part of your training. All the practices you go through, which is part of your training, with the idea you're doing all this, and the competition you're playing against all the time that opens the door for you to be better. Saquon Barkley met with the media today in Indianapolis. The running backs will go tomorrow. There's a perfect example of someone taking advantage of a first-class system to go with his own personal work ethic and desire, which is huge to making any athlete better, and Saquon Barkley has always had that. But look at it, what he came in at. Saquon was, what, 207, 208 when he got there? He ran last season between 228 and 230. I believe as of today he's 233. But he went between 228 and 230. He is built like the Rock of Gibraltar. Because A, he put in the work, but B, he had the facilities, and he also had the strength and conditioning coaches that taught him the right way to do it and made sure he put on the right kind of weight. He had speed coaches to help him as well, sports performance, and if anything happened, and Barkley did get hurt a couple of times in his career, you have a first-class training staff and medical staff that can get you on the right path, especially on rehab, to get you back. All of these items are talking about outside of a university. Ask yourself how much each one of those items would cost. And I haven't even gotten around yet to talking about tuition. I haven't even gotten around yet to talking about books and tutors and so forth that can help. I haven't even talked about that part yet. I've talked about all the elements that through your own work ethic you can take advantage of and then you can make yourself better. Teachers, coaches, I mean, everything along the way that can help and make you better. And if there is an issue, you've got people on staff that can overcome it. Now, I'm going to go back years and years ago. I'm not going to name the player. But Penn State had a very talented player, man, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. And it turned out they kept falling asleep in meetings and the whole thing. They finally diagnosed him with narcolepsy. So they were able to get him back on track. I mean, again, these are all things that said student-athlete didn't have to pay for because they had all that available to them. Ask yourself how much all of that costs and realize that the student-athlete, fortunate enough to be in the program, doesn't have to pay for any of that. Now, are there ways that they should be getting maybe a little more money? Again, I think it should be looked into, likeness and autographs and things like that. Or maybe you put it into an escrow account, and when they graduate, then they get the money. I think it's worth exploring. You know, you could talk about the unintended consequences. Like anything, you have to do that. And, you know, explore it because, you know, you want to make sure that they're getting the best shake possible. But if you're going to start paying them, then what are you going to do? Start charging them for all the services they have to take advantage of? I mean, it just can't be a one-way deal. And I know people have the perception of those in the media is that it's a one-way deal. The one-way deal benefits the university. The one-way deal benefits the athletic department. And there's another fact as well. If you want to start paying football and men's basketball players, there'll be a couple of factors that come into play. You will get Title IX involved, which means you just can't pay football players and men's basketball players. You're going to have to pay the women's basketball players. And there are other athletes. You're probably going to have to pay a comparable number, 98. You'd have to find 98 student-athletes that would have to be paid on the women's side under Title IX, which then brings the next part. In order to balance budgets, and believe me, these university athletic departments are using every dime they get. They are not taking the money and saying, hey, you know what? You know, I'm sitting here, of course, 70 blocks away from Wall Street here. But they're not going down to Wall Street and say, you know, I think we'll buy 10,000 shares of Amazon. We just got all this cash laying around. No, all the cash goes back in. Penn State has 31 sports. The minimum you have to have, I think, is 18. So you have a lot of places that have 18 or 19 sports. Penn State has a dozen more sports than these people do. Well, what if the budget falls out of balance because you're paying a section of your student-athletes? Well, if the budget falls out of balance, you may have to do what I would hate to see done, drop other sports to get it back in balance. I don't want to see people losing scholarships. There's a formula as to what works, and I'm going to talk more in depth about the formula and how it works coming up in later shows. Joe Lenardi, Joey Brackets, one of the really great guys out there, still riding high after St. Joseph's blew out Rhode Island by 30. Ran them out of the building, ran them out of the Ryan Center, ran them out of Kingston. Joe Lenardi, next half hour, then Jeff Byers on Wrestling at 4:06.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
So what did he say? He said that they're going to explore Wonder Woman's next villain? Really? I thought that was all said. It's going to be the suit. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf in New York, where Penn State takes on Northwestern tonight at 6:30 at Madison Square Garden. Wisconsin has already beaten Maryland today. And with that, we bring in the outstanding Joe Lenardi, who is still riding high after St. Joe's woodshedded Rhode Island earlier in the week by 30. Joe, what a win for the Hawks.
How about that? To be introduced as the outstanding Joe Lenardi, I was just on two shows in Nebraska. They called me the mediocre Joe Lenardi.
Yeah, I was just there too, Joe. I wouldn't sweat it.
Yeah, I mean,
wouldn't sweat it at all. Hey,
I'm going to be public enemy number one somewhere. It's just a fact of life.
Hey, it happens. But I got to ask you, I know that Phil's had some injuries this year. For them to walk into Kingston like that and beat a team that just clinched the regular season Atlantic 10, what a great win for St. Joe's.
Yeah, I mean, a couple years ago, they gave me a plaque that said I had done 1,000 games. So let's just say, yep, whatever the number is, it's a lot. I believe now, 48 hours almost later, that it's the most unlikely outcome that I've ever seen in person. I mean,
yeah,
like okay, ranked teams get upset. Okay, sure, there was a limited scenario in which St. Joe's had a big night, Rhodey had an off night, and, you know, you get a tip in and you win at the buzzer or something. But, right, I mean, 30? And it could have been,
yeah,
50. I'm still in shock because I've,
yeah,
seen Rhode Island, you know, almost a dozen times this year. And, I mean, they're not Final Four good, but they're certainly good enough to get to the second,
right,
weekend.
Right,
and
exactly.
I've obviously seen, you know, St. Joe's a couple of times. And, you know, we're limited. And
yeah,
that was just stunning. And I guess AP is still researching and has yet to come up with a home loss by a ranked team that was that lopsided.
Right. Yeah, you're like me, Joe. As a matter of fact, you and I are both in the 1,000 game club. So, all right. If
you
Penn
count
State
football,
won,
though.
No, that's just hoops.
I'm just kidding.
That's just hoops, Joe. Yeah. If Penn State had won on Sunday, then we'd be having a different conversation right now.
Yes.
In terms of where they are and so forth. So that said, so let's get to the Nebraska part of it. I just watched them, and I know Bruce Rasmussen was at the game. I talked to Bruce for maybe 20 minutes before the game. When you look at them, what are the issues with especially their early schedule and also maybe an issue with their conference schedule that keeps them still out despite number of wins and conference wins?
Yeah, I don't know what Rass thinks about Nebraska. What I do know is, relative to bubble teams of the past, in the two most important areas, quality wins and strength of schedule, they,
yeah,
come up short. And they don't,
yes,
come up short a little bit. They come up short, you know, a pretty sizable amount, meaning their inclusion would be fairly historic. Of course, also fairly historic would be leaving out a 13-5 Big Ten team.
Right.
But I argue and maintain, and I think most of the people who do this are in the camp that's more a comment about the Big Ten than it is about Nebraska. I don't have anything against Nebraska. I like steak as much as the next guy.
But,
like, my job is to say, how does this profile stack up relative to other teams this year and similar teams in other years? And the answer is pretty clear. Does that mean they're not going to vote Nebraska in? Of course not. It just means that they would have to go against type to do so.
And here's the other part, too. Sometimes it's not always just your non-conference schedule. Because of unbalanced conference schedules, you can end up with a relatively weak schedule based on the teams you don't play home and away. Nebraska falls into that category. They fall into the category. They did not play the stronger teams home and away in the conference, and they only have two significant wins, I would say. That would be Michigan and Penn State. And Michigan's the more significant one, of course.
Yes, and you know, it's I always used to joke, and I've said it even about Penn State in the past. Sometimes you have to be careful what you wish for, because if you schedule for the NIT, that may be exactly what you get.
Right.
And, you know, look, there was no way to know that Nebraska would be 13-5 in the Big Ten. I don't fault their planning. But however the league sets up its schedule in some rotational manner is in part probably to get enough big games for TV and in part to do some natural, you know, rivalry type stuff. And when Nebraska got its league schedule, they probably, you know, wiped their brow and said, whew, this is good for us.
Yeah.
But they'd be better off, you know, 11-7 against somebody else's league schedule, because they would have had more opportunities to post wins against the field. And again, no respect to Penn State, they really only have one.
That's right. I agree with that completely. When talking to Bruce Rasmussen, he said, "Look, they look at the full body of work. Injuries come into play, for example, when seeding comes up, because then that's the current snapshot." I thought that was a reasonable way to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at Oklahoma, now this is not an injury situation, but when you look at Oklahoma, which was tremendous early, but of late a lot of people would love to play them, what do you see with them?
I see a team that still needs to win a couple of games, at least one for sure. I mean, I could see them getting in at 8-10 from that league this year, given, you know, all the meat on the bone in the non-conference. And in that league, you're playing an NCAA team almost every night, or 80% of the time. But, like, at some point, winning has to matter. And, you know, they've lost, what, 9 out of 10? Like, remember the old days when we had a column of last 10? They should be thankful that's not there anymore, because, you know, 1-9 is a pretty ugly number. And certainly they still have an opportunity to change that. They could put up 2 or 3 more wins here in the matter of 4 or 5 days. But it sure doesn't look like it's going to happen, and that would be one of the greatest collapses we've ever seen.
Who falls into the category of one seeds in your mind right now?
Virginia's going to be a one. Almost certainly. A Big East team is going to be a one, almost certainly. Probably Villanova, but it could still be Xavier. I'm of the opinion that it won't be both a week from now. Kansas seems to be permanently paying rent on the top line. This will be their 8th in 12 years. As they seek to continue their record as being the Atlanta Braves of college basketball.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they have one championship like the Braves, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the analogy, right?
Beautiful, beautiful.
And I still believe that Michigan State, barring, you know, a really early exit, is going to be the 4th number one seed, for the simple reason that no matter what we were told a month ago by the committee in ranking them 11th, I think common sense says they're one of the 4 best teams in the country. And I think at the end of the day, that will prevail. Now, there have been quite a few years in which common sense has not prevailed. But, you know, I'm like Charlie Brown kicking the football. I still believe this is the time Lucy's going to hold it and things are going to go like they're supposed to.
Yeah, I agree with the Michigan State part being a one seed, because, and part of it is, I know we can look at metrics and so forth, but gee, Joe, I've seen this team. I mean, when you have 155 career starts coming off your bench, you're deep.
I mean, I picked them to win it all in October.
Yeah.
And I think if you look at the top teams and you envision them all when they're at their best, I think they have the most ways to beat you. Throw in Tom Izzo and throw in March, I think you'd be foolish to bet against them.
And here's the other part, too, is I look at Purdue, for example. I felt like they peaked too soon.
Yeah, they're better than Purdue. And Purdue's really good.
And Michigan State is better than Purdue. Because,
you know, they're like old school big. But, you know, I don't think Michigan State's tiny. Look, and who knows what's going to come out in the however many days. The tournament starts, 2 weeks from today, the main bracket anyway. You know, who knows, the tournament might be canceled by then. But, you know, or it could be Penn State and St. Joe's in a second round game. But,
right.
And wouldn't we all live to see that? You guys would be the better seed, of course, and rightfully so. But I certainly think that it wouldn't surprise me if when those, you know, online tournament challenges come out, if more people pick Michigan State than anybody else.
Yeah, no, I can see that. Who would be the candidates? I'll make this the last question because I know you have to get going. Who would be the candidates to go to Dayton, in your opinion?
And right now, it's looking like either Louisville or Syracuse, whoever's the last team in from the ACC. And think about that for a second. We're like talking
about that.
Like Louisville played at Virginia Tech last Saturday, and if I'd have said to you in an interview 4 months ago the game would mean more for Louisville, you'd have scratched my head and called somebody else. I think there's going to be a Pac-12 team in there, like Southern Cal or UCLA. I actually think the Pac-12 is weaker than the Big Ten. So none of those teams impressed me a whole heck of a lot. St. Bonaventure is going to be right around that group as a second team out of the Atlantic 10, although, you know, maybe have played their way above that by beating Rhode Island and Davidson here back-to-back. It's those middle-tier major conference teams for the most part that are in that mix.
Well, I opened up by referring to him as the great Joe Lunardi. I can say that because I know Joe Lunardi. Always a pleasure, my friend. Always a pleasure. You are the best. You know how much we always enjoy talking with you and also sharing time when our paths cross.
Well, Steve, good luck. You know, we're hoping to see your partner at St. Joe's on Saturday when, Don DeGiulia, the AD, is retiring.
Yeah. Congratulations. But, he's an awesome guy, isn't he?
I know Dick wants to be there, but for your guys' sake, we're hoping he can't make it.
Right. I understand that completely. But congratulations. Dom did a great job. What a great job he did at St. Joe's.
No question.
Joe, thanks so much. Appreciate the time. This is always a lot of fun.
I love it. You know I do.
The great Joe Lunardi, and I do mean that. Joining us on the show today. We will come back. Next half hour, we'll shift gears, go to wrestling. The Big Ten Wrestling Championships coming up. I'll talk with Jeff Byers. We'll discuss the status of Jason Nolf as we continue with more brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, Arizona basketball coach Sean Miller, they're going to be playing tonight. And guess what? He's going to coach the game. Miller said in his first public comment since the report that he never knowingly violated NCAA rules and said he never paid a recruit. Never have, never will. Source told ESPN's Jeff Goodman that Miller will coach tonight when they take on Stanford. Sources told ESPN's Mark Schlabaugh last week that FBI wiretaps intercepted phone conversations between Miller and Christian Dawkins, an employee of ASM Sports agent Andy Miller. And according to sources familiar with the government's evidence, Sean Miller and Dawkins discussed paying $100,000 to ensure that DeAndre Ayton would sign with the Wildcats. Miller and Dawkins had multiple conversations about Ayton, according to sources who told that to ESPN. The Arizona coach today in his press conference did not mention ESPN by name in his comments and did not take questions after making a statement. Now, ESPN is standing by its reporting on Miller and the FBI investigation. But Miller is really, he came out today and he was forceful about it. He said, look, he said he never knowingly violated NCAA rules and said he has never paid a recruit, never have, never will. So, expect him to coach tonight. Simple as that. So he's going to be back on the sidelines. And I keep going back. You know, first of all, he's maintaining his innocence. He talks about that. Whether he is or not, I don't know. I don't know. I haven't heard the wiretap. And you have to wonder if outside the FBI anybody else has. I don't know. But he's going to coach. Earlier today, Wisconsin at the Garden beat Maryland 59-54. They get Michigan State tomorrow at noon. Right now, with 12:45 to play in the game, Michigan leads Iowa 46-40. Penn State and Northwestern at 6:30 tonight. We're on beginning at 6 o'clock. Bucknell plays its Patriot quarterfinal tonight at Soica against Loyola. So that's this evening. I want to say 7 o'clock on Eagle 107. That sound right?
Yep, 6:30 airtime. Yep.
With Doug Birdsong. So, yeah. So that's the path for Bucknell. They have to now have a well-timed three-game winning streak, and it has to start tonight.
Yeah, all four quarterfinal games in the Patriot League will be played at the same time tonight at 7. The other three are Lafayette at Colgate, Boston U at Lehigh, and Holy Cross at Navy.
Right. That's all coming up tonight. But again, Patriot will get one bid. That one bid will go to the champion with the automatic bid. Bucknell at least has the opportunity to if things go well, to play each step at home, starting tonight with Loyola at 7. 6:30 the airtime with Doug on Eagle 107. Meanwhile, Penn State gets Northwestern tonight at Madison Square Garden at 6:30. We're on beginning at 6 o'clock. So that's where it stands going into this one. Here's one for you. Mike Watkins, of course, I think people know will not play tonight. But John Harrah's going to start tonight for Penn State. Julian Moore is going to come off the bench. So that's how they're going to do things tonight because they feel that Julian's just more comfortable in the role of coming off the bench. Well, if that's the case, then you do that. You know, you get Derek Pardon to contend with inside. So Penn State can go small at times in this game. But also, you have to take some pressure off Lamar Stevens because if you go small, that means if Pardon's out there, then Lamar has to guard Pardon in the post. That's not easy to do. And you want to keep Lamar out of foul trouble in a game like this. Vic Law will not play tonight for Northwestern. Toe injury, he's out. Jordan Ash is out. Backup guard who played every game, but he's out. He won't play tonight. But Bryant McIntosh will play tonight. He's got that shoulder injury, but look, I think it would take much more than that to keep him out of the lineup. So there you are. Look, one of the keys tonight is going to be pace. Tony Carr is going to have to set the tone in this game tonight for Penn State because Northwestern, it's not that they deliberately want to slow the game down, but they run deep sets that have a couple different options off of it, so they run a longer set. So you have to be patient against them defensively. But then once you get on offense, you've got to push it a little bit against them and set the tone there, and that's where Tony comes in. It's also important tonight, and this to me is the biggest key of the game tonight, Penn State needs to get to the lead and play with the lead. That'll be 6:30 tonight, 6 o'clock the airtime. Coming up next half hour, the Big Ten Wrestling Championships in East Lansing. Jeff Byers, the voice of Penn State Wrestling, will join us to talk about the Nittany Lions and the march to another title.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.